This is the Never Winter Nights podcast for the week of October 30th, 2006. This is episode one. Welcome to the Never Winter Nights podcast. I'm your host, Jay Smith, and today we have Trey, a.k.a. Ashercon Zilu.
Hello, everyone out there.
And Ken, a.k.a. Shepherd Epsilon Clavius.
Hello, everyone.
This is our premiere podcast, so we're happening at the same time that the Never Winter Nights 2 release happened just this week, so we got lots of good stuff to talk about. And let's go ahead and start off with that. We had the Never Winter Nights 2 release. Did you guys go out and get the game?
I have not got it yet. I have it on mail order. And it hasn't arrived yet.
Ooh, who'd you order from?
GoGamer. That's who I typically order my games from.
Trey?
Well, I went with you.
I know, but I was going to give you the chance to say it. You went to GameSpot. Yeah, Trey and I went to GameSpot and picked it up yesterday. So that would be on...
And as we were leaving, one of the other TOG members and his wife walked in to purchase it.
The other guys in our clan, Kevin, was there right behind us picking it up. So we got to know that everybody, almost, you know, Ken's got it on en route. So
Kevin had it pre-ordered since, May?
Yeah, he had it pre-ordered since May.
I picked up the game and the book, the guidebook, strategy book.
Strategy book? Yeah, I picked up the strategy book and the world builder because we're going to be working on a persistent world model here pretty soon. So.
And last night I was looking through this book and it's pretty slick.
Yeah, I tried not to read too far because there are spoilers in that book.
Yeah, I stopped at the walkthroughs.
Yeah, I got the walkthroughs, so I stopped before I got there. Just to tell you what we got coming up. Our big thing we got tonight is a interview with Annie Carlson from Obsidian. She was a weapons and armor designer. Trey and I had the chance to interview her earlier this week, so that's going to be our big thing coming up a little bit later. But before we get to that, we'll cover some of the other stuff going on. Like Trey and I have been reading some articles about direct-to-drive. Evidently, Neverwinter Nights has been available, made by Atari and direct-to-drive, and made available Neverwinter Nights as a download. You can prepay, you could have prepaid and downloaded it before the release date. The discussions on updates coming to direct drive and being compatible and coming on time and having to wait. I don't know if you guys have been reading any of that.
On a website, it's called The Sorcerer's Place, they have kind of some snippets from John Galloway, the senior producer with Atari. He's spoken up on the patch issues, and here's what he said. The updater should be telling you the version is still 1.0 as long as the patch is failing. You should be able to play single player and probably even multiplayer with, you know, other 1.0 versions. For those who purchased the game via direct-to-drive, they had identified there was an issue with the auto-patcher failing to complete the install for the patch. And on November 1st, they said they didn't anticipate that it wouldn't take any longer than the end of the day by November 1st to get a fix out for it. But I think it took them until today to actually get the fix out, so I think that's why everybody's up in arms about this whole direct-to-drive issue. So last week when we first saw that, I'm kind of glad I didn't go try it out because I was actually thinking about trying it out.
Yeah, I actually thought about trying that out, but one of the posts I'd read talking about all the trouble he'd had, that you had to wait for the patches. You know, you couldn't go get the patch directly from BioWare for Neverwinter Nights. You had to wait for direct-to-drive to get it. Evidently, they're hooking their updater and software and all their fun stuff into it. And for it to maintain compatibility with their system, they had to continue to do that. So patches were always late, and sometimes they didn't work. So he was warning everybody not to do that. Because first, I was excited. I thought, man, I'll go do that. And then I read that and thought, well, maybe I won't.
Sounded like a good idea at the time, but...
Well, and maybe they've got it worked out this time. Maybe it's better now than it was. Maybe we get some feedback on that from...
Yeah, I do remember one guy saying that he had used it before in the past for other games, but it was not too hip when it came to patches, you know, that would come out after the game had released. I found an article where Game Informer Online had reviewed Neverwinter Nights 2 and had rated it an 8. I assume that's out of 10. It didn't really say. And here's a little snippet from what they had to say. With a few rare exceptions, Neverwinter Nights 2 is an even better translation of the tabletop Dungeons & Dragons rule set into the virtual space than its predecessor. This title easily trumps the original Neverwinter Nights campaign with a vastly superior story and characters, not to mention the Knights of the Old Republic-like party system that takes the place of overpowering summons and hirelings. Developer Obsidian has created one of the best single-player fantasy tales around. With numerous branching paths and side missions to explore, Neverwinter Nights 2 modular nature also means that you can play through the official campaign or any other downloaded module cooperatively with a friend or two. And I thought this was the coolest thing right here, because I noticed when I was installing the game last night, on the menu, on the single player menu, it had an option down there for connect for 1 to 2 players or something like that. And so that made me think of the cooperative. And then I found this article and thought, oh, cool.
So it's actually saying that we're going to be able to play, and we're going to have to test this out and see for sure, that instead of having to put up a server, which I want to get into a discussion about that later, putting up your own server or joining a server to play cooperatively, you can just hook up with 2 or 3 of your buddies and go run the single player.
Yeah, you can play the premium modules.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, we're going to have to test that one. That sounds like a challenge to me.
When you click on New Game, New Campaign, and then you come to the Select Campaign screen, but then over to the site under Info, it describes the campaign that you have chosen. Then at the bottom it says, recommended for 1 to 4 players. So that's what I thought, oh, that must be the cooperative thing they're talking about.
I don't know if that's the cooperative or not, because when I went through the introduction, I wound up with 4 people in my party by the time it was over. So, like I said, we're going to have to play with that and see if it really is or not.
I wonder if that 1 to 4 means 1 to 4 you and up to 4 henchmen.
Well,
and then if you have, but if you do co-op, then I guess the buddies that are playing with you would replace the companions.
Your guess is as good as mine on that one. Okay, Trey.
There's a little bit more of this article. The completed campaign blows the first game's story out of the water with a gripping tale of an evil cult that seeks Neverwinter Nights' destruction along the path to domination of all of Furin. Did I say that right? Furin. Players even have a decent amount of input through the choices they make over how the plot unfolds. However, the gameplay has a tendency to feel disturbingly similar to the original's clunky framework.
Which, that's going to be disappointing if that's true, because it really wasn't the original modules that made Neverwinter Nights as popular as it's been for the last several years. It's the community and what they've done with it, with the tool set, that's what's kept it alive and going. I'm not trying to say like that I'm the one that's saying that, because I've heard Ken say that, and I've heard numerous people say that, and I tend to agree with that.
And some of the forums that I've been at over the last week or so in getting the news out about the podcast, I've heard a lot of that. Some of the first questions I got were, okay, so is your podcast going to be just Neverwinter Nights 2? That's what it looks like, you know. But even though we said in our little blurb there, it's Neverwinter Nights and Neverwinter Nights 2.
Well, yeah, there's such a huge community around Neverwinter Nights 1 that you can't ignore that. And I see a future growing around Neverwinter Nights 2, but I don't see Neverwinter Nights 1 future as bleak as some others may see it. It's still going to be a long time before Neverwinter Nights 1 is shelved by anybody, including me. There's still lots of stuff to play out there, lots of good community content, and hopefully we can focus and bring some more focus to some of those modules that people have maybe forgotten about or have seen improvement.
Right. I was talking to one guy on the Planet Neverwinter forums, and he was talking about that very fact, that it was the community that made the original Neverwinter Nights what it is, and not the game itself, because he thought the game itself was kind of subpar.
Oh yeah, I totally agree with that.
It was kind of funny. He goes, I'm actually looking at the post now. He goes, I'm going to be blunt here, but Are you a Neverwinter Nights fanboy or a critical gamer who, like many of us, thought the community was what made Neverwinter Nights, not the game itself?
So, are you a fanboy, Trey?
And so I replied back, that sounds like a challenge. So if you want to read about that, go out to Planet Neverwinter and do a search on podcasts, and you can read all about that. Kind of a funny thread.
Yeah, one of the posts I was reading earlier was talking about that Atari had released, said there was some statistic they had on their forum saying that only like 3% of the people that had purchased Neverwinter Nights had actually played multiplayer online persistent world modules. I don't buy that. They're saying that most of the people were buying it for the single player campaigns. I don't buy that either.
I disagree with that.
I mean, I just know my personal experience and the people that I know play it. We were playing multiplayer online for months before any of us even thought about diving into the single player campaigns.
When I originally bought the game when it was released in, 2002? 2002, 2003, somewhere around there. I played the single player campaign for about a week before I quickly got bored with it and started looking for multiplayer modules that I played with one of my college buddies, and we played that module for months.
It was the whole online, get online with your friends and run campaigns together or run a drow run or just explore the world hack and slash that would entice me to want to go do that. It was, I can sit at home and read a book if I'm going to do single player stuff, First impressions of the game so far. What have you played so far? How far have you gotten into it, and what are your thoughts?
I've installed it.
Very good.
Well, you got the first step down.
That's all I've done. All right.
Well, I actually have installed it. I have run through the tutorial, and I am starting in Act 1.
Oh, wow. You got into the first act?
Yeah. The things I liked about it, I'll start there first because there's more of those. The thing I did like about it was the new companion system. You can interact with your companions. You can take over a companion and play from that player's perspective. You can adjust their inventory, their weapons, even pause in a battle and determine who's going to attack who, and then unpause the battle and pause it again if you want to. So I really like that. I like the fact that when you level up, they level up, so you get to choose their feats and control a little bit more about how specialized you can make them be to help keep your group well-rounded and skill sets.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, it was kind of fun because I'm like, oh, I don't have magic. Well, I'll just switch to her because Amy's got magic and I can do what I need to with her.
So what did you think of the interface? I noticed here in this, continuing on with this Gamer Informer Online article, the interface is noticeably improved, but the odd way the engine assigns attacks of opportunity as well as the horrid pathfinding and AI for both allies and enemies are entirely unchanged. So what did you think of the interface?
For the most part, I like the interface. It takes a little getting used to for the little area map. We're kind of used to the square area map from Neverwinter Nights 1 instead of it being a more World of Warcraft style with the round circle where you can zoom it in and out. It's not too bad. You can always hit the M key and get the full map like you can in the other ones of Neverwinter Nights 1 because that's not too big of a deal. I did like the 110 quick slots, which are much easier to control. They've also come up with some, I don't know what they're calling, but I think they're like quick panels. You can hit hotkeys to bring up your already memorized spells or your modes to switch from stealth mode to just running or whatever else like that. So you can pull them up in mini bars, basically, and not have to fill your quick slots with that stuff. So
I have a question. Since I haven't seen the game yet, I'm interested on how inventory management works. Is it kind of like Neverwinter Nights 1, where you kind of have to play a little Tetris game to get all your inventory arranged in all the slots? Or is it done differently?
Well, it's more laid out in kind of a grid that you can drag and drop stuff into those grid locations. It's not quite so much freeform. You know how in Neverwinter Nights 1, your inventory, if you had a greatsword plus 7, which happens to be rather large, it could take up a lot of space in your inventory window. It's relegated to icon now.
Okay.
So it's each item takes up an icon slot.
Okay.
And equipping and unequipping is a lot easier now. They put a lot more double-click into it, so you can double-click an item, and it'll automatically equip it. And if you want to unequip it, you can drag it off your character and pop it down into your inventory slot. So,
oh, very good.
Yeah, it's pretty slick. That part of it is pretty nice. The things I kind of had some complaints about it, you know, and I guess it's fairly common. The last two games I've downloaded or have last two games I've purchased have had heavy downloads of patches the day of the install. I've had to go out and get humongous patches that take another 45 minutes before you can actually get into the game. I'm still not very happy with having to keep the disc in the tray to play the game. That's something I disliked about Neverwinter Nights 1, and fortunately, shortly after that, they came right out with a patch that removed that, and I didn't have to keep the CD in the tray anymore. I pray that they'll do that again, because it's a major nuisance to me. Piracy or no piracy, I'm not going to pirate the game. But every game I've got now has to have the CD in the tray, so I'm constantly switching discs and constantly running the risk of scratching them. You can't make a backup of these discs, so...
Is the tutorial... Does it work better than Neverwinter Nights' original Trial by Fire introduction?
Yeah, it's a fairly good introduction to the... It's kind of wordy. It probably tells you in more detail than you need how to do that, and I guess they have to do that, but I found myself starting to just skim the reading of the window for the tutorial instead of really reading it word for word like I was starting out, because it's fairly more intuitive, so it doesn't take to do it but once or twice and you kind of got the hang of it.
Wow, you can even control the skills of your teammates?
Yeah, when they level. If they level, when your whole party, every person in your party levels, you have to go through them one at a time and level each one of them, picking their feats, setting their points to the areas that you want them to be. Of course, you can just pick the recommend button if you want to go through it quickly. But when it comes up to picking feats, or in the case of Amy, you can pick what her next spell is that she gets, what level of spells that she gets to do. And then you get to go set what spell she knows how to memorize out of her spell book.
So it sounds like it's really much more like a traditional D&D session than the original was.
Yeah, I think it is, and what I've heard from people that played Knights of the Old Republic, I've heard it's very similar to the way that they use the tool set to build Neverwinter Nights, to build the Knights of the Old Republic and how you control people in that game. I haven't played it, so I don't know for sure, but that's what I'm being told. It's discuss a little bit about what we think, you know, and we're theorizing here, what the future for Neverwinter Nights 1 is.
I think it will be a very slow death. I think there's such a following behind it. I don't think Neverwinter Nights 2 is that big a threat to it for now. I think a lot of people will be playing it for a long time because of the sheer number of modules that are available for it.
Today we have Annie Carlson from Obsidian with us. She's a weapons and armor designer for Neverwinter Nights 2. How are you doing today, Annie?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you guys?
Glad to have you with us. Before we get into questions, tell us a little bit about how you came to be a virtual weapon slinger and armor crafter for Obsidian.
Well, I first joined Obsidian back in the middle of January, and I joined the project about early March, and I did the general getting myself familiarized with the project, which is, I mean, this has been going on for a while, and the project is so huge that it took me some time. But then they said, hey, Annie, do you want to be in charge of items? Like, here you go. So I was like, oh, wow, cool. So it was a huge undertaking. And I didn't really get to the depth of it at first. It was something I sort of got baby-stepped into. But I don't know. I didn't really have a time where I sort of went, like, oh, my God, this is impossible. Like, it was handled really well, and I was always really enthusiastic to tackle things, and it was a lot of fun. And this is a total geek thing, but I thought it was a great time.
So can you tell us about some of the new weapons and armor that have been introduced in Neverwinter Nights 2? Any new twists that will make us go, oh, cool?
Well, I think the biggest thing, we do have the falchions and the war maces, and the falchions are basically like a big two-handed scimitar, and I think those are super neat. War maces are like, I thought there was a personally, I thought there was a lack of good two-handed blunt weapons to completely smush things with, so the war maces were added. We talked about it, and they were put in, and they're a lot of fun to work with, but I think the biggest thing is that we have prestige class specific armors now. At first they were just put in to be something shiny and neat when you were sort of selecting characters and you could go down and look at the different prestige classes. They weren't just blank armors. They were what I felt, okay, this epitomizes the arcane archer or the blackguard or whatever. And instead of just being, that being in the tool set, Josh Sawyer, the lead designer, was saying, I'm sorry, not the tool set, the character selection screen said, let's actually put that in the game so that, you know, this isn't just a little tease. And let's give these powers that would really enhance or catch up on any shortcomings of this prestige class. So there's something that players are really excited to get. And I think they're really fun. I that's my personal favorite.
Wow. So you're saying that you can actually deck your character out with armor appropriate for his class?
Oh, yeah.
I was reading out in the forums when we were deciding who we wanted to call, you know, to have an interview with, and I saw there was some debate. I was reading some of your threads that were out there, Annie, and it seems like there was some debate on what was better, the great sword or the falchion. Can you enlighten us?
Yeah, that great debate. I think that between those two, it's hard to say because it's sort of the great debate that's always been in D&D. What you put more value on, like something that has a base damage that's higher or something that has a greater crit chance. That is how you build your character. And if you just want to dole out damage and have it be by and large higher, the greatsword is really nice for that.
I've always preferred the greatsword because I always play a paladin. So that fits my character. So.
But I think that the falchion is also really nice because it has that 18 to 20 crit range. And that crit range is a lot more valuable than some people believe. You build your character to really take advantage of that. Or, say, if you have a falchion that has, like, that's keen or has massive criticals, for example, that, it all of a sudden becomes this completely awesome weapon of just dealing, ridiculous amounts of damage and death. And those enhanced criticals really come into play for how effective it is. So it really comes down to player choice, and I love all stabby things equally, pretty much. So I like the falchions a little bit more in this case, just because I was given more range since they're totally new. They're like, oh, here, you know, complete these as you want. So the four named falchions that are in the game, they're original Annie creations, I guess you could call them. So I, you know, feel a little bit more closely attached to them. But as weapons, I'm sort of like, well, you know, you pick what, you know, square peg for square hole, round peg for round hole. You pick the weapon that's appropriate for the character in the situation.
So I like to play as a fighter, so am I going to like the falchion as a fighter?
If you're a dex-based fighter, if you really want to go toward the weapon master route, pick a falchion. I really like them. If you're I want to just run in there and smack stuff and make it die, like the bare bones Street Fighter, greatsword is, yeah, that's pretty much the main weapon of choice. But don't sell out the falchion.
Sounds like that's going to be a debate that goes on for quite a while.
Yeah, to me it's one of those classic debates. It's not a completely crazy weapon that has some obscure bonus that can only be used in certain situations. Well, what's more important to you, like the crit range or the total damage?
So tell us about the Waking Dragon. I assume from our previous conversations that's a type of falchion.
Is that
one of your special weapons that you created?
Yep. I'm quite proud of it. I think I'm not gonna say this is exactly what it does, but I'm. No spoilers. What it does, what the falchions do well, it does really, really well.
Really well. Okay. Cool.
Yeah, Trey will be looking for one of those for hours.
Oh,
now,
baby.
I can tell.
Oh, baby, you bet.
There's a lot of fun. Especially if you're aiming to get something that, if you have the sort of character that, say, goes to the critical, I think you'll like it.
So you've said that some of your favorite weapons are great swords and falchions. What about armor? What are some of your favorite armor?
Oh, see, for me, I'm so specific to, oh, it depends on the class.
Okay. So we'll start there. What's your favorite class?
Oh, that's hard. I like playing the stabby rogues, but I also like playing combo stealth casters. So, I like the arcane trickster, and I would say I really created that arcane trickster armor. I spent time with that one, and I like how I was able to get it to look as well as what I was able to have it do. I really like the sneaky casters, but in terms of, oh, this was fun to make, the more I can add to an armor sometimes, the more fun I had with it. Like, well, okay, some of the armors are a little bit more pared down in terms of attachments. Like a breastplate and a full plate armor that might use the same base, there are a lot more attachments on the full plate armor, obviously. And sometimes I had a lot more fun with that because I just had more choices and I could spend more time on it just by sheer volume. But above all, I think I had the most fun and enjoy the look of the duelist the most because I got to do some crazy stuff because they're a more flamboyant class. I got to give them this sort of blue jerkin and the hat. Everybody seems to love the duelist hat. I love the duelist hat. I think we have phenomenal hats in the game, and it's got this really, for lack of a better phrase, the hat is pimp. It's got a great feather, and it's very flamboyant and really, I guess, properly duelist-y. I had a ton of fun with that one. And so, right after I finished playing that arcane trickster, I'm going duelist.
So are there some weapons and armors that are best paired together, or is that, once again, depend on class, like you've been saying?
I think, once again, it does depend on class. That's something that's sort of up to each person. There isn't, like, well, I guess, in terms of, like, wow, gee, I would like these things, like, I like the idea of I'm a huge sucker for a two-weapon fighter, which isn't always the best thing. It depends on the class, but personally, I'm like, yay, two weapons. And I would go for in my tabletop D&D game, I have a rogue sorcerer, a class called a dagger spell that relies on having two daggers, so I have a lot of fun with that. In terms of, I would grab these weapons right away. I would get the Sharp Shadow Blade and then either the Dark Companion or the Wizard's Ally, and it's a dagger short sword combo. So I personally like that. But in terms of, like, you know, get this combo for the win in the game, there isn't really a setup like that. So you're more encouraged to, if you find something better, you find something that's more appropriate to the situation, just swap out. So you don't feel like you're locked into a certain combo or, oh, there's my set bonus or something like that.
So can you tell us a little bit about the design of the tool set? As far as weapons and armor are concerned, is it pretty easy?
I think it's pretty easy. I've seen it grow a lot. When I first started using the tools that, I mean, I do come from using Photoshop and I do come from using 3D Studio Max, but it's something where once you get that first item created, it's simple to go through. And the armor set tool, it started out very bare bones, and I've seen it evolve and progress and become easier and easier to work with and more cool stuff you can do with it. And there's so many choices. I can understand how some people would be like, I feel scared by all this choice, but really when you look at it, it's just, oh, I can flip to these different attachments and I can change these different colors. And once you get the hang of it, it's really simple. You can spend, you know, half hour on a single suit of armor, just tweaking everything just so, and the individual tints for each one of the different attachments. Or you can toss out a really awesome armor in less than 5 minutes. Like, you just get a little bit familiar with it and you can just go. So it was really handy. It was really nice to just be able to basically pick up and play.
I haven't got to see the tool set yet, but I guess, Jay, you got to see it, me and part of the beta, so.
Yeah, and the difference between the original Neverwinter Nights tool set and the Nevronauts 2 tool set, there are some significant improvements in the Nevronauts 2 tool set, and we were just impressed to see an on-death script that Firepoint was supposed to, that as far as everything else and laying out areas and maps and stuff like that, it's really incredible what you can do with that tool set now.
Yeah, we're all really proud of it. I just, when I was getting familiarized with the project really early on, I would just spend time messing with like making areas and dropping trees and doing this and that, and it's just fun to play with it, to experiment with.
Well, Annie, I was reading an interview with Chris Avalone, I think I pronounced that correct.
Yep.
And he was asked, who was the king nerd at Obsidian? And he mentioned that you were the resident console nerd. So
yeah,
what does that mean?
I found out about that interview way after the fact. I was actually randomly checking around for different stuff and just ran across that like, oh my god, that's awesome. I'm flattered by it. I used to joke that if you took like a normal sized room and then just a cup of water, the amount of the useful knowledge, the quote-unquote practical knowledge in my brain could fit into a cup of water, and all the rest was the useless random trivia that it just collects and accumulates in my brain. And I do play a ton of games. I have all my life, and I have an enormous memory for crazy stuff like that. I know a lot about some very silly things, and I also supplement this by reading a lot of fun, very nerdy books. Like, I love The Masters of Doom. That's a really great book on Romero and Carmack and id, and Dungeons and Dreamers, which is another great one. Like, I supplement nerdery with more nerdery, and I love it. I love it.
So, tell us what it's like working for Obsidian. Yeah, long hours, lots of jolt, or whatever the caffeine kick that's in these days.
Well, actually, it's been, even on the craziest crunch times, it's been focused, everybody's working for a single goal. I don't know, I've worked in other books, and there's not crazy insane crunch times. People aren't completely disorganized. Even when everybody's stressed, there was a lot of fun being had, and I'm sure I annoy all of my friends by talking about how much I love my job. I'm positive that I do, because I got to work on the weapons and armor and items for Neverwinter Nights 2. Like, this is my first game. How lucky can you get? Like, this, it's been a lot of fun for me, and everybody I work with is so cool and talented that, yeah, here's me bragging about my job again. I know. For Annie, she has to work on Neverwinter Nights 2.
That's just so terrible. I feel for you so much.
Yes. In a first impressions article that I read from A. Hasselon from TechCentral.com, he talks about how Neverwinter Nights 2 will allow more than one henchman. Will you be able to control their weapons and armor selections as well? I guess, will you be able to control their inventory in general?
Yeah, to quote Napoleon Dynamite, heck yes! Yeah. That loot's really fun, but if they're just for you, they're slightly less fun. But yeah, you can make your fighter your pack horse, basically. Just drop, here, I found nifty stuff. Like, here, fighter, you take all this. Or you can find some really nice, like, this would be perfect for so-and-so, and you can load them up. You can give them a ton of scrolls and then be really mean and be like, I'm going to set your AI so you can't use any of them. Like, haha, but they're for your benefit. So you probably don't want to set them to, like, never use any magic items because the AI is pretty good about that. But yeah, you can swap them out as much as you like. You can give them whatever you care to throw on them. So it's really nice being able to feel like you're rolling in an area and you're not the only one who's all buffed out and equipped with really cool stuff. That you feel like when you're moving into an area and you have everybody to tweak out just so that you and your party really are a force to be reckoned with. When people say henchmen, I always want to go, no, it's companions, because they're such a huge part of the game, and they level with you, they have interesting things to say, they're such a huge part of the game, where if you couldn't change what they have, that would be sort of crippling that whole aspect of it. But we try to push them as much. But they are important.
Maybe we can get that changed. Okay, everybody out there listening, they're companions, not henchmen.
Companions.
He also mentioned in that First Impressions article about a new elven subrace called the Sun Elf. There's some pretty good weapons and armor that you were able to put into the game for this new Sun Elf, or maybe tell us a little bit about the Sun Elf.
Well, the Sun Elf, their benefit is that they're similar to elves in that they have that con minus two constitution. So they're a little bit weaker, but instead of having a plus to their dexterity, they get a plus to their hit. So they're excellent casters. And I tried not to make any race-specific armor. I mean, there are armors out there that only a set group of races can use. They're very rare, like Storm Armor of the Earth Children. I believe that gnomes, halflings, and dwarves, only they can use it. That's part of the background of that armor. But, I mean, those are rare as hen's teeth. You didn't want to cut people out of it just because they, you know, chosen a different race to play. But for the Sun Elves, yeah, you could try a number of different builds on them. They don't have really huge, wide-spanning weirdness with their attributes that would cut them off from a lot of different classes. But that makes them casters to be reckoned with. And the con minus makes it harder to make them like a frontline fighter or something like that. But I see, once again, it comes back to me being very specific and wanting to see things on a case-by-case basis, because I've seen a lot of character builds that if you told me, like, oh, I'm playing such and such, I would give you a strange look. There's no way that could work. But I've seen them work. I've seen somebody pull off the best half-orc rogue barbarian that you've seen in your life. And after that, that was a learning experience for me, tabletop-wise. Like, okay, anything goes if you know how to play it right. And there's so much more versatility within classes in D&D than there have many other role-playing games and games that have spun off of D&D.
Yeah, the 3.5 rule set has kind of really opened that up, hasn't it?
Yeah. So for Sun Elves, in my personal preference of, hey, I think this would be a good idea, Wizard, obviously. Maybe you could be more of a duelist. If you wanted to be a fighter, it would have to be somebody who would be very finessing, and the duels get the int bonus. Any defense that it might be. Of course, a million people are going to come in and correct me on that one. But the duelist is really cool. If you really thought, I need to make a Sun Elf fighter, or, you know, I'll die, or something crazy like that. A ranger, a druid, perhaps, if you wanted to put dump your points into wisdom. So, like I said, I can't, for me, I'm so, it depends on this and that, and how people play the class. I want to see unique builds with the Sun Elf. I think you can do a lot with them, and that their int bonus gives them, like, a unique ability. And that sort of, like, oh, this is better for this class, and, you know, help me focus my character in this way versus picking another race and having them go a different direction.
So do you like playing multiplayer more than single player, or...?
I haven't gotten a chance to play multiplayer yet because then I'm running through single player and running through single player. Oh, okay, you know, fixing that and changing this, and I've been, you know, up to my neck and trying to check things and look at this and look at that, and I need to pull my head out of the sort of craftsmanship area of it and be like, okay, but the times when I've really got to sit down and play the game, I don't want to go home. I want to just keep playing, and getting a chance to play a multiplayer, I'm really looking forward to that. I'm waiting for my friends who have all been hounding me about, it's been too long, it's too long, get the game out, I want to play the game. Like, I'm really looking forward to the multiplayer experience.
Well, speaking of that, since we're within 4 days of the release, what's the atmosphere like there at the offices right now? Is it excited anticipation or apprehension, or just what's the feel?
I think we're all just really excited for it. I think it's a lot calmer because some people are like, well, I'm going to take this time to go on vacation. People are, I think we're all really confident about it. We're really excited. I'm almost hide under my desk excited, like, oh my gosh, how are your people going to react to all this and all this media attention on it, with it getting released and with reviews being able to come out and so on. I mean, this is my first game, so I get that the first game jitters. And there are so many veterans here that I'm like, another notch in the barrel. Like, I'm really excited about it. They're not like, you know, hyperventilating like I am. But I'm not like freaking out because silly, oh my god, they're opposed. No. I'm excited about it because I have so much faith in it. And, it's this chance for something that we've been working on for so long, to finally put it in the public, and here you go. Like, I hope you like it. We're all really confident about it, and we're all really excited about it, and really eager to see what people have done with it, what we'll do with it, and have more to do.
Well, looking at the community and the forums going on the BioWare forums and and the Nevermore Not Too forums, there's a humongous community that's just biting tooth and nail waiting to get this thing. So yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of excitement going on. And
it's been really fantastic. Just back in the tools that beta, when people started posting their screenshots and, you know, little plugins they've made, that gave me the first taste of like, oh my god, people are going to do amazing things with this. Like, I think we're giving some people something amazing in terms of in the single player, in the, you know, giving the multiplayer aspect to it, and the tool set itself being so powerful, and seeing what people have, I mean, just even in the first couple of days that people had the tool set, seeing what was coming up, I mean, on the beta forum, just astounded me. And the more I think about it, the more excited I get. Just want to see what people can come up with and how they react to this.
Yeah, we've actually, in the tool set, when we were looking at it, we actually ran some roadblocks, stuff that we couldn't do because we knew the tool set right now was so focused on the single player module that's going to be released with the game. And we're looking at a specific world module that we're going to be creating. And we had to keep backing it up and going, okay, this is because we're going outside the boundaries of what the tool set was initially just built for the game release. We're kind of have to take a little more liberties, and like you said, you start seeing these crazy things coming up, and you're like, how did you even think to try that?
Yeah, it's amazing what people come up with, how they adapt things, and we tried to make something that would work for everybody, and obviously people want to do so many different things with it, and react to it in so many different ways, and there's so many talented, versatile people out there that see something and go, well, I kind of wanted it, you know, it does X and I kind of wanted it to do Y. Like, here, I'm going to change it and, you know, work with these tools and, you know, make a couple of my own and make this work. And that's so unbelievably cool to me.
So what's ahead for you after the Neverwinter Nights 2 release, if you can say?
I am moving on to Project Georgia. That's another one of our projects that we have going on right now. It's with Sega.
Well, Annie, thanks for taking the time to talk with us. I guess that's going to wrap us up for now. Anything else you want to let your fans know about before we sign off?
Fans? I'm just kidding.
You're going to have some fans after this, I promise.
I don't know. It's been a blast working on this game. I thank you guys for your interest in wanting this to happen and letting me, I guess, by your interest, getting me a chance to work on it, and it's been an amazing experience. I hope you guys like it, and thanks a lot for letting me be on your show. This has been a lot of fun.
That wraps it up for this episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast. Please join us next week when we continue the discussion for Neverwinter Nights 2 and dive further into the future and the history of Neverwinter Nights 1. If you have any questions, comments, or show ideas, we're interested in hearing them, so send them to us at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. That's SHOW @neverwinternightspodcast.com. Or you can send us an audio message by clicking on the Send Me an Audio link on our website. You can get to that at neverwinternightspodcast.com. Please don't forget to tell us how to pronounce your name and where you're from. Also, when you're in the site, you can add your shout-out to our Frapper map. Just click the Frapper logo over on the right-hand side of the site, and you can add your shout-out there. We love seeing where everyone's from, and we hope to see that map get really filled up. That's it for now. Get in game.
And level up.